On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. John McCain says he's ready to go to the gates of hell to track down bin Laden. Rudy Giuliani said it's okay to keep Roe v. Wade and okay to dump it. Mormon Mitt Romney said Americans don't vote on a man's church. And 3 of 10 GOP candidates say they don't believe in evolution. And that's just the first GOP 08 debate at the end of a crackling week. We've got a war funding veto, call girl fever in Washington, Wolfowitz in trouble, and the calming queen with a big hat in Jamestown. Up next on Point, our weekly news roundtable with top analysts Jack Beatty and you. We have a great panel with us today. Joining us from Thousand Oaks, California is Lynn Sweet, Washington bureau chief for the Chicago Sun-Times, columnist for The Hill. She was at the GOP's first 08 debate at the Ronald Reagan Library, Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California. Lynn Sweet, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
With us from Raleigh, North Carolina, is Republican strategist Mark Roderman. Last week, we invited Democratic Leadership Council Chair Harold Ford Jr. to look at the Democrats' debate. Mark Roderman has been in the thick of Republican White House politics since 1972, campaigned for Ronald Reagan, advised Phil Gramm in 96, raised big money for George W. Bush in 2000. He's a partner at Roderman and Associates and a former officer of the American Conservative Union. Mark Roderman, thank you for being here.
Great to be with you.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly, just out with his big new book, Age of Betrayal. And you heard it here first. Jack, good to have you.
Tom, good to be here. And hello, Lynn and Mark.
Lynn Sweet, you were there when the 10 GOP contenders who have declared took the stage. What did you see up there, Lynn?
Well, I saw that the front runners, Rudy Giuliani, John McCain, and Mitt Romney, kept their front-runner status, that these other seven, most of whom are not generally known to the American voting public, I don't think did anything to distinguish themselves one way or the other. And by the way, it's just a stunning location that the library is at, too.
Well, I guess we remember that from the Reagan funeral when there was so much coverage here. Ronald Reagan very much in the air last night. George W. Bush, not quite as much. Mark Roderman, what was your sense of how these candidates handled a president whose numbers aren't good?
Well, first and foremost, I was very proud of the field that we put on the stage last night. I do look at it as spring training. I thought they all purported themselves well. I thought the one that helped himself the most was Mitt Romney.
Romney because?
Well, I thought he had a good presence. I think he was relaxed. He looked presidential. I don't think any – there was no knockout punches thrown. However, I think that was really Mitt's first bite at the apple nationally.
He had that presence on the stage. You say let's listen to just a little bit of former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney and, of course, Mormon talking last night, among other things, about the importance of keeping religion, one's church, out of politics.
We have a separation of church and state. It served us well in this country. Okay. This is a nation, after all, that wants a leader that's a person of faith, but we don't choose our leader based on which church they go to. This is a nation which also comes together. We unite over faith and over the right of people to worship as they choose. The people we're fighting, they're the ones who divide over faith and decide matters of this nature in the public forum. This is a place where we celebrate different religions and different
faiths. Thank you, Governor.
Mitt Romney there last night. Jack Beatty, you watched the debate. You saw the former governor of Massachusetts on the separation of church and state right there. How'd he do?
I thought he did well. I mean, he looked good. He can't avoid that. He smiled a lot. That's to pass the Julia Roberts test. You know, they did a quantitative study of smiles and her pictures, and the pictures were successful to the degree that she smiled. The more she smiled, the more money the pictures earned.
Okay.
And Mitt was smiling just standing there. And so I think he won the smiling contest, and he actually said a good word about one of his achievements in Massachusetts, which, of course, is a universal health care program that involves mandates and involves taxes and that involves regulation. But none of that did he mention, nor does he mention it on his website. But when asked about it, he said, oh, of course, I'm very proud of it. But, you know, here are these candidates meeting at a time when the hotline just today today comes out with a poll that shows, I think, the steep Republican hill. They find that a generic Democratic candidate is ahead by 19 points over a generic Republican presidential candidate. And as to the particular candidates, they find that Obama and Edwards are 9 to 12 points up on anybody in the Republican field. Hillary tied with them. And, of course, this, too, at a time when the war continues to go downhill, and some serious problems there with the oil bill and the Iraqi
in
parliament.
Baghdad.
Well, boy, you just piled a lot on these Republicans
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
So when you say something like that, though, that sounds to me, besides having a tremendous point of view, it doesn't help, I think, understand that we're so early in the election cycle here, that one
spring
of the
training,
pluses
Mark
of
Waterman
having,
calls it.
No, I don't even think we're at spring training.
Not even.
Not even at that. But what's interesting is that by the candidates agreeing to do these debates so early, you're letting people actually see who they are in an 18-candidate field that may, if Newt Gingrich and Fred Thompson get in, expand more. So I would think that the polling numbers also have a lot to do with name recognition right now, and I would think any analysis really based on it, and it doesn't take a lot to know that Democrats are in better shape generally than Republicans right now.
Tom,
but
Mark
part
Rada,
of it, they have two star power candidates whose names everybody knows right now, Obama and Clinton.
Yep. Mark?
I agree with that, and I think polls are meaningless at this point. I would say that I think there was a stark contrast between the Democratic debate and the Republican debate.
In what respect?
I think you saw that Republicans wanted to defeat al-Qaeda and Islamofascism, and essentially Obama and Hillary want to pull out of Iraq. And I think that's a clear choice for the American people. So I think the national security issue will trump any other issue as we go forward in this 08
Mark
election.
Mark Rutman, as a GOP strategist for a long time now, how did you see them on the stage last night dealing with that, the unpopularity and difficulty of the war? Facts sitting there, yet it's a long time till the vote. They know what's going on with public opinion on that front. How did you see, let's say, among the lead candidates, them thinking that challenge through? I mean, Giuliani, is it, for example, just gung-ho?
Well, I thought that the one that really tried to get out front early on and establish his credentials was McCain. I thought he was a little too forceful, and I thought he pushed a little too hard to show energy. I think Giuliani, to a degree, owns the national security issue, and I thought Romney backed off a little bit and didn't talk about it much. I thought there was too much. If Republicans are debating abortion and gay marriage, they're definitely going to lose, and I thought there was a little too much emphasis on abortion.
It was instructive because the person who got in trouble over that in the debate was Rudy Giuliani. Now, one of the things about abortion is that people have opinions. They usually don't change very often, and mostly voters want to know where someone stands. And they might have a toleration for people changing their views through the years, which is what happened with Mitt Romney.
Lynn, could you describe for us when that question was put last night? Chris Matthews raised it, I think, and he put it to everybody. Remind us of the question that got Giuliani kind of over a fence there.
Would you want the repeal of Roe v. Wade, which was that landmark Supreme Court case that paved the way for legalizing abortion rights? And after the other candidate said yes, 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 Rudy Giuliani said he too would support it. And Chris Matthews went back to him just to clarify, because that is contrary to the position of somebody who says that they're supportive of abortion rights. Now, it took no longer than the end of the debate for NARAL to send out a press release noting that all the Republican candidates now are anti-choice. So, you know, sometimes these debates, and it must be incredible pressure to be under, maybe you don't hear the question right, but when you're at that level and you make— So right now, I don't even know what Giuliani's position is. So if I were to write a story, he would be spending the day today, I imagine, wherever he is, or the next time he's out there, or for writers doing follow-up, what is your position? And just the fact that he might have to clarify within a Republican primary is not good.
And I guess
people want to know where people stand.
Right, and it's more than language. I mean, he's kind of over a barrel here. Let's listen to that exchange as Chris Matthews comes. He's going down the line, asking, would you favor overturning Roe v. Wade? He comes to Rudy Giuliani.
Mayor.
It'd be okay.
Okay to repeal?
It would be okay to repeal. It would be okay also if a strict constructionist judge viewed it as precedent, and I think a judge has to make that
decision.
It would
be okay if they didn't repeal it.
I think the court has to make that decision, and then the country can deal with it. We're a federalist system of government, and states can make their own decisions.
Jack Beatty, is this a stumble or is this political genius? It would be okay either way.
It's insouciant about what is an issue that, of course, has such great moral weight on either side. And then, of course, he did finally come back in the end to say, I do believe that a woman finally should have the right to choose herself. So I guess his final word on it was that he did hold with the central finding of Roe v. Wade, that this is a matter for women to decide. He's got this position, and it sticks out in that field, that's for sure.
Can a candidate say, you know, I've got my position, but it's not my call. It's up to the country. It's up to the courts. Right. It's okay. Either way.
He can't do it because he appoints people to that court. And,
right. I mean, that's just saying that your bully pulpit even, or is your role as a leader, which is what Giuliani sells himself as a moral leader, ethical leader of the country, he is going to have a hard time saying so he would abandon that. He would abdicate that role in trying to lead on that issue.
There's a lot more we want to listen to, but let's just get for a moment in our ears that monarch from the UK who's come over to celebrate the big 400th anniversary in Jamestown, just for some long-term perspective as we plunge ahead here. Queen Elizabeth addressing a joint assembly of the Virginia State Legislature, where she noted the cultural diversity, is one way of putting it, of the original Jamestown colony.
When three great civilizations came together for the first time, Western European, Native American, and African, released a train of events which continues to have a profound social impact.
There it is, the big long view. But in the here and now, it was John McCain last night. We heard it referenced before, talking very strong. Mark Roderman says maybe too hot on Iraq, saying withdrawal is not an option.
My friends, when the majority leader of the United States Senate says we've lost the war, the men and women that are serving in Iraq reject that notion. And if we lost, then who won? Did Al-Qaeda win? When on the floor of the House of Representatives, they cheer when they pass a withdrawal motion that is a certain date for surrender. What were they cheering? Surrender? Defeat? We must win in Iraq. If we withdraw, there will be chaos, there will be genocide, and they will follow us home.
Surrender and victory, and they will follow us home, says Senator John McCain last night. Lynn Sweet, how do you reckon the Republican frontrunners are looking at this issue now? Mark Roderman says, good on them for being gung-ho. That's the way to win. Do you see them embracing that? Does it look like a winning strategy?
Well, right now there's a stalemate in Congress in the White House over how to proceed. So there's no winning strategy unless there's a compromise, because it takes the White House and Senate to agree. So it's absurdist to say now that there isn't going to be a compromise, because there is. It's being negotiated right now.
But it was McCain himself Democratic saying leaders. Surrender, defeat, or win. I mean, that language of victory or defeat, still his framing the issue.
Tom, I think that is a good contrast with the Democratic Party, and I think the Democratic Party is defeatist on the Iraq issue and on the whole war on terror. What I thought about McCain was that his body language was a little hot, but the message was good. I thought that the person who did the second best on that and pretty much owns the national security issue is Rudy Giuliani. The one who didn't really talk about it, front runner as much, was Romney. But we all know there's going to be some sort of bill that funds the troops. The Democrats are going to fund the troops.
Lynn's what's right. Sticking in your craw there?
Nothing is sticking in my craw. I have a point to make here that the strength on national security with Rudy Giuliani for and this is the second time you said it, is merely a untested strength compared to what it really takes to be a commander-in-chief. And I don't think that what he said last night demonstrated more. Here's the point where John McCain did well. You very clearly know where he stands. And again, the point of a debate in this very complicated format with this 10-man field, Democratic 8-person field, is that if you can achieve getting your point across, I think you've done well. When McCain talked about chaos and genocide, and that's the first time I think he has used this word in a form that I've heard.
He's saying that would follow withdrawal, he said.
That at least, I mean, that is a raison d'etre for understanding very clearly what he thinks would happen, which is, you know, which is an argument that somebody who strongly supports that point of view is taking, because you know in that one soundbite that you ran what he wants to do and why he wants to do it. And that's important for him, because if that's your issue as you go into a primary or general election, you know exactly where and why he stands. And that's looking forward.
And the Republican base agrees with him on that.
Yes, the Republican base does, but the electorate doesn't. And that is the dilemma of this whole field. They have embraced the incubus uncritically of this war. And, you know, you look at this from the point of view of the general election. If the war continues into 2008, this is just going to be a disaster for the Republican Party. Now, I had expected to see a little daylight last night from some of these people about perhaps some skepticism about the surge, perhaps some criticism of the Iraqi government for not being faster to make the kind of changes that would allow us to go home.
McCain was very tough on execution, Jack. He said it's been handled terribly.
Yes, but then he said, and now we have a strategy that I think can win. Well, he knows. In fact, even before the Petraeus announcement about the number of troops, he was calling for 75,000, 50,000 troops, not for what we finally wound up sending. He, you know, he's got to know that this isn't enough to do what he wants to do, but this is all in all for him. And, you know, if comes... And by the way, now the president is starting to change his goals. We're hearing about, well, victory, maybe, but what we really want is a diminution of the violence between the factions. That doesn't sound like victory so much as
let's have a stalemate. Who's the one that suggested, I can't remember, who was it that suggested that there be an election in Iraq to decide if the American
troops should go? I think that was,
that was Thompson.
Tommy Thompson, I believe, former Wisconsin governor.
Yes, right. Yes. That was I think, his one moment where he said something that you might have snapped your head up and said, oh, because...
the only Republican that took exception to the war was Ron Paul.
Yeah, well, of course, Ron Paul way out on his own beam there. We've got a little tape from him. This is the Texas former congressman, voted against the war. It was asked last night why his fellow Republicans are wrong. He said that we've got to take a close look at the overall foreign policy.
I'm suggesting very strongly that we should have a foreign policy of non-intervention, the traditional American foreign policy and the Republican foreign policy. Throughout the 20th century, the Republican Party benefited from a non-interventionist foreign policy. Think of how Eisenhower came in to stop the Korean War. Think of how Nixon was elected to stop the mess in Vietnam. How did we win the election in the year 2000? We talked about a humble foreign policy, no nation building, don't police the world. That is a conservative, it's a Republican, it's a pro-American, it follows the Founding Fathers, and besides, it follows the Constitution.
Congressman Ron Paul last night with one kind of dissenting voice right there. We've got a lot of listeners that want to join us. Lynn, Mark, Jack, stand by. Liz is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Liz, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I heard one of your guests talk about Mitt Romney looking presidential, and I think we need to be really specific about what that means. I mean, Mitt Romney is a tall, white, male, and I'd like to expand the definition of what looking presidential means.
Did you look at the whole field on the stage or the photos of it last night, Liz? What struck you on that front?
Well, there are a lot of men up there. There are a lot of white men up there.
Yeah.
David Letterman last night on his show said it looked like a restricted country club meeting. So
you're saying, let's look beyond that look, Mark. I mean, there's no getting away from that. The Democrats have got Obama and Hillary, and it's not yet that way on that GOP platform last night. Oh, Richardson,
right.
Of course, yeah.
That's correct. I just thought that Romney was very at ease, very relaxed, and in command of what he wanted to say, and I thought that he did very well for his first time out.
Does the GOP have a diversity problem on display on that stage, Mark?
Well, you know, obviously Hillary's running. You know, that crossed my mind as well, that we did not have a woman or a black on the stage. And the other thing that crossed my mind is that you didn't have Newt Gingrich or Thompson, who are waiting in the wings or on the bench, who may well be in the next series of debates.
No, actually, Newt Gingrich has said that if he gets in, it wouldn't be until the fall and the next.
No, I understand that, but
there's a Republican debate. Well, if you're saying it just so people don't think,
yeah,
no,
I'm
no,
just
what
doing
I'm
a
saying,
little fact. Hold on, let me just let listeners know that the next GOP debate is in May in South Carolina, and then there's another GOP debate in June in New Hampshire.
Yeah,
so
but,
even
but
if
I do
Gingrich
think
got
at the end of the
in,
day,
it wouldn't be until the fall.
That's correct.
Mark, you're in the middle of it. Do you feel a void up there to be filled, a vacuum for Fred Thompson or Newt to step into as you look at that field?
Well, I do think there's what the two issues that are going to be very important for all candidates on both sides are authenticity and competency. And Charlie Black said the other night that the brand is not good for Republicans. He's a longtime GOP strategist. And I agree with that. I mean, people are not happy with the Bush administration, let's face it. I mean, you have a crisis, I think, of what people think their institutions are doing. And and how they're behaving, FEMA, veterans, the attorney general's office. So it seems like daily something happens to the Bush administration, and they don't get much good news. So I think competency and authenticity. I thought a lot of people tried to put their brand with Reagan, and I think they need to be themselves.
On Wednesday, the president was. Excuse me, Lynn. Yep.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, in that case, Reagan won the debate.
Yeah, and he's a little bit out of the running at this point, but very present. Let's listen back to that moment on Wednesday when President Bush was talking with building contractors in Washington with that what sounded like it might be a shift of what success would mean in Iraq, his definition of violence in Iraq changing, lowering the bar, perhaps, that he's setting for success there.
Success is not no violence. There are parts of our own country that, have got, a certain level of violence to it. But success is a level of violence where the people feel comfortable about living their daily lives. And that's what we're trying to achieve.
Maybe a pretty modest redefinition there. Let's go to Bruce in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Bruce, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just want to say, hi, Tom.
Hi.
The only point that was made last night that really caught my attention was Tommy Thompson when he said that Iraq has 18 provinces and need governors. Why haven't we set up elections for the governors of those provinces?
And that caught your ear because it sounds like a move that might step us toward Iraqis being able to run their own show more effectively?
Well, that's a conspiratorial point of view. But
is it?
I mean,
having governors sounds like a first good step if you wanted to try and do that, but maybe not easy to do in current circumstances. Bruce, thanks for that. Let's get a call from Storrs, Connecticut. Chris, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
On Tommy Wentz's recent trip to Syria, and it seems that just a few weeks ago, the entire Republican Party was savaging Nancy Pelosi for a similar trip, and Secretary Rice, on her trip, in fact, went even farther and made contact with the Iranians. And I'm wondering if Condoleezza Rice seems to be almost triangulating what she's doing in her policy with where the Democrats want to go instead of with what the Republicans have been saying their policy is all along. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks for that, Mark Rodiman. What about it? Condi Rice in Syria, not exactly breaking a lot of bread with the Iranians, but certainly talking with the Syrians, and Nancy Pelosi caught a lot of flack for that. How do you see the Secretary of State's trip?
Well, I think that I subscribe to what Baker said in the Baker Commission. I believe we do need to be talking to the major players in the Middle East, no question about it. If we're not talking and they're not bought into what's going on over there, then I think we're isolated, and I think that has been a problem for the Bush administration long term.
Jack, do you see something turning there with Condi Rice at that table, the region, talking about the conflict? From Baker right on down, a lot of people have said you've got to get the neighbors involved here. Is this it? Is this the beginning?
It could be, and if it means that Dick Cheney is in the shade on foreign policy, I think that's all to the good for this administration. Rice has authority. I mean, she has Bush's ear, and she's not doing this just on her own bat, and we're not going to hear from the vice president that this is, quote, bad behavior, as he condescendingly said about Ms. Pelosi. This could be the beginning of some realistic talk with the Syrians. According to today's paper, there's already been a lowering of people going across that border into Iraq.
People as in alleged insurgents.
Yeah, and there's even been some talk of contact that other people have had with the Iranians. So this is encouraging. Of course, all this has to be put in some context. We now know that in 2002, the administration received a wide-ranging proposal from Iran for a settlement of all sorts of issues of terrorism, Hezbollah, you name it, and we basically spurned it. And so a little late now, but if we could perhaps now start to talk to them, I think it would be all to the good.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's go to Hillsborough, New Jersey. And Liz, hi, Liz, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. The point that really that stuck out, I have a problem with candidates being flip-flopping, having that problem where they don't know really where they stand. And he asked a question the one that stuck out was John McCain for me.
John McCain is a flip-flopper or a steadfast? Which way?
Well, he's a steadfast in the war, but he's a flip-flopper when it comes to, they asked him the question about evolution. Does he believe in evolution? And he said yes, but then he decided to add to it. And, you know, it's either you do or you don't. And it was a major turnoff for me.
Yeah, we got it. Liz, thanks for that. Lynn Sweet, I guess there were three. Huckabee, Senator Sam Brownback, and Congressman Tom Tancredo of Colorado that raised their hands to say they did not believe in evolution. Everybody on board? Did you see McCain, trimming on that?
No, I just think it was a Clarence Darrow moment. It was an interesting question. And again, it was a shorthand way of being able to help people understand where the certain candidates are coming from. I don't know if it means more than that, since they're not, you know, I just don't know if there's more than that, except it was a useful question for people who wanted to help figure out how they, cut down the field for themselves.
Mark Roderman, as a Republican, a fair and useful question. Do you believe in evolution?
Yeah, I do believe in evolution, and I do think that I thought the format lent itself to a lot of information. I thought it moved a lot faster than the Democratic debate, and I credit Chris Matthews with that. I thought it was much more informational for the public.
You know, the flip-flop that McCain got caught in, really, was the question about taxes. You voted against the Bush tax cuts when they were proposed. Now you want to make them permanent. How do you explain that, Mr. McCain? And I don't think he had a good explanation. I think his explanation was, they're doing good for the economy, it seemed to be. That's quite a shift. I mean, that's one of the things that gave McCain some credibility, at least with independent voters, that he was skeptical about the tax cuts because of issues of deficits and so on. Now he's for making them permanent. And indeed, he's for a flat tax, and they all seem to be for a flat tax. And if that's to be the GOP position in the fall, that's a good one for the Democrats to run against, because that eliminates progressivity in the tax code.
Mark Roderman, what do you say?
You know, Tom, I do think McCain has a problem with economic conservatives in regards to the Bush tax cuts. He was against them at first. And I also think he has a problem. I think he did a very 1988 thing when he ran, and I think it hurt him with independents and with a lot of Republicans, moderates, when he ran to see Falwell and Pat Robertson.
We're looking at a week in the news, from the war funding veto to the GOP debate. Paul Wolfowitz, formerly with the Bush administration, now World Bank president, addressed a panel investigating him for conflict of interest with the job for the girlfriend issue. Afterwards, his attorney, Robert Bennett, told reporters he thinks that he and Wolfowitz made a convincing presentation to the World Bank's investigating panel.
I think we certainly showed to the committee, both in his statement, in the submission we made to them, and his answering questions, that there is absolutely no basis for claiming a conflict of interest.
The Wolfowitz attorney saying no problem here. Mark Roderman, what do you make on that front? Should Paul Wolfowitz hang tough, or should he be gone already?
I think he should be gone already. I think he ought to fall on his sword and do the right thing. I think it really looks bad to hire your girlfriend. You know, I feel the same way about Gonzalez. He looks inept. I think he ought to go.
Lynn Sweet, on the Gonzalez front this week, more revelations. Do you feel the heat rising on him, or is that sort of going off in the margins and disappearing in the shadows, the attorney general issue?
No, it's not going to disappear, because the Democrats who control Congress have these hearings going on, and there is still documents from the hearings that they had on the dismissed U.S. attorneys that are being that are coming out. So this isn't going away, and it will not go away. And the Democrats still are so, I think, embracing the idea that they control these investigations and they can control a news agenda by using the new tools they have, I think guarantees that this won't go away. And then there's still more information to come out. And the fired U.S. attorneys are becoming more active, too, in talking about it, especially David Iglesias.
Jack Beatty, a lot of rumbling on that front this week.
A lot of rumbling, bits and pieces coming out. As we mentioned on this show a couple of weeks ago, there was the issue in Missouri of a temporary U.S. attorney from the Justice Department Central ginning up voter fraud cases just before the election. Now those have been turned down by a judge, did nothing to them. Very suspicious, and we're going to hear more about that. We also now are finding out about Carol Lamb. We know now that
California judge.
That's right.
Attorney General.
She had a dialogue with Mr. McNulty, the number two man in justice, and she said, "Well, you know, basically, why am I being let go? What's the reason?" And he couldn't answer her. He didn't know. And then we hear that there was a meeting at the White House where somebody in the political apparat there said, now we have to get our story right about why we're letting these people go. So piece by piece, drop by drop, the scope of this thing is. And of course, now we know that Gonzalez had delegated to two of his aides, Kyle Sampson and somebody else, the job of essentially appointing, vetting on all the appointments for junior attorneys in these offices, and there's some allegation that they used political criteria as their main reason why they picked these people.
There are the headlines, and of course, as Lynn says, with investigative power in the committees on the Hill, that no doubt will keep going with Carol Lamb, the U.S. attorney in California, and others. Let's go to Karen calling from Waterville, Iowa. Hi, Karen. You're on the air. What do you see out there this week?
Hi, Tom. It's Waterloo.
Excuse me.
That's okay. Just comments, and then I'll take answers off the air. But the first thing is about the caller who said she didn't see, you know, anything but white men up there. They look like a conservative club of some sort. I really don't care if it's a purple Martian or a white man. If
okay.
He can lead the country, or she can lead the country.
Okay.
I am more concerned about somebody who stands up there and says that they know America needs faith-based leadership and they don't care what church they go to. I think they do when they're saying that. I think they do. I think the fact that they're asking people whether or not they believe in evolution is proof of that, and it's also really frightening. We've got a war on. We've got economic mess here as a result of that and other issues from our administration, and I really don't care whether they believe
But Karen, let me ask you, it was Mitt Romney who said, this is a nation, after all, that wants a leader that's a person of faith. Do you think he's wrong about that?
I think he's dead wrong. He scares me. I'm an independent. I'm not a Christian. And it concerns me to think that you've got a man who's on a very faith-based, you know, mission. And
yeah, Karen, we've got it. Let me put it to Lynn Sweet. Lynn, we've seen a lot of Democrats in churches in the last few months. Do you think Mitt Romney's wrong when he says the country wants a leader who's a person of faith?
No, I thought he handled that question well. And because he belongs to a faith that is a minority faith in the United States, his answer, I thought, showed an appreciation for that. And that is that people of faith have an understanding between each other, even though the faiths can be different. And I am thinking that is a distinction he wanted to be made. I mean, I'm interested in your caller's comments because sometimes here's what you learn from people who are running for president. Where they go and what they do shows what they believe is to be effective. So if there is talk of faith in a campaign, it's Barack Obama mentions his Christianity very often. It's because they think it's something that will help them either explain themselves or just make them more electable. So that, you know, where they go and what they do, I think, demonstrates the point that Romney is making, that this is an appealing point. People of faith, I think, sometimes understand, and maybe that even though you're not of my faith, you understand what it is like to be involved in your faith. And I think that what he's saying, the Mormon issue for him is one, for Romney, is one where there's a great deal of public education that's going to be taking place and is taking place. It probably doesn't help, you know, to have the cable TV show Big Love out right now, too. So he's kind of got to navigate around
polygamy
that.
On parade, you know.
You know, Lynn's right about that, and I do think he has a lot of education to do, particularly in the South with evangelicals who look at the extra books of Mormon almost as heresy when you talk to him.
Mark, what about this issue of how tightly, it's not just one party here, but let's say in the GOP, where the Christian right was very, very strongly embraced in 04 and effectively embraced, how tight do you expect that embrace to be this time? Will Mitt Romney have to back off of that a little bit? Do the kind of problems that our caller Karen in Waterloo, Iowa raised, you know, very practical problems, is that going to lead to a turning down of the religion, the sort of religious music in this campaign because the problems are urgent, pressing, and not exactly otherworldly?
Well, first and foremost, I don't think that Christian conservatives or evangelicals are monolithic. Mm. I do think the security, national security, trumps every other issue in this election. And I don't think the American people like a candidate, whether it's a candidate for county commissioner or whether it's a candidate for congress,
Sounds like we lost Mark there for a moment. Let's get another call, if I may, from Newton, Massachusetts. Ramona, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks.
Yeah.
I just want to comment that I think that the Democrats have a chance to take the White House and hold Congress in 2008, and at the same time we'll still be embroiled in a mess in Iraq for which we have no national consensus. Right now, the Democrats are getting ready to fracture over what to do about the veto. Under those conditions, the fracture will be huge. The problem we have is this is a war being fought by our military, not by our nation. We don't have national attention on the war. So my suggestion is let's support Dennis Kucinich's efforts to impeach Dick Cheney, televise the hearings, focus the nation on Halliburton and the Downing Street memo instead of Sanjaya, and get people talking about what we can do about the hugest crisis of our lifetime.
Well, thank you. It's a great big crisis, no question about that. Mark, we lost you for a moment there in the middle of your comments on religion. Ramona puts the war on the table and says, let's wash everything else away and go back, you know, step by step, even with an impeachment to trial, to bring out the details. Dive in there anywhere you want.
Well, I don't think the American people want another impeachment. I think they're a little tired of the arguing that's going on. I think a lot of conservative, particularly people who worked for Reagan, like Jim Baker and a lot of other folks, had questions about the doctrine of preemption. The fact is that we're there now, and I think McCain made a very good case last night. What happens if we leave? And I think that's the key question that both parties have to answer.
Mm-hmm. We also have to focus on what happens if we stay. The Surgeon General today, the other day, comes out with a report. A third of soldiers and Marines are now suffering from PTSD or traumatic brain injury, and fully 49% of National Guard's personnel because of their frequent deployment. So that's one of the prices of staying.
Mm-hmm. A pullout date certain is off the table with the veto, at least for now. Democrats, though, the headlines are already saying, looking to bring benchmarks to the fore, some Republicans speaking favorably about that as well. Still a handful, but some positive noises out there. Among the leaders of that view, Republican Senator Olympia Snowe, she's put forth her own bill that the commander forces in Iraq would have to meet 6 benchmarks in 4 months.
I think the president has to understand, you know, deadlines do serve a purpose. And we now have to see a demonstration of a good faith effort on part of the Iraqi government that they're prepared to do what it's going to require to achieve a political consensus. And General Petraeus has indicated that by early September, we will know whether or not the surge has been a success.
Lynn Sweet, I know you've been out in California as this has been brewing some this week, but what about the GOP on benchmarks? People looking for a middle ground here? Might they even join Democrats in asking for firmer benchmarks and accomplishments by the Baghdad government?
Yeah, yes. And, you know, at the top of the show, I talked about that there is a compromise. And there is the benchmark putting the onus on the Iraqi government to do certain things is politically doable instead of putting the pressure on the U.S. to have the deadline. And that's, I think, the political calculation that is evolving here. The issue for Democrats keeping together their vote on the left, where if the ultimate bill seems heavy on funding and light on plans to get U.S. troops out of Iraq, they might lose some votes on their end. But on, you know, you pick up more Republicans. That's why what Olympia Snowe is doing is where I think the negotiation is going ahead. Benchmarks have something verifiable, have something written down, but not something that mandates or ties the president's hand.
Not necessarily, though if penalties are attached, they could. I must say here, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's listen to one more voice from the GOP, Senator Trent Lott, saying midweek that benchmarks might be just the thing to reach a compromise.
I think Republicans and the president are amenable to some benchmarks, provided they don't slop over into trying to, you know, dictate to the commander-in-chief or the commanders on the ground. Then you might say, well, what are the enforcement or what happens if? That's got to be decided. But I think you can. There are several different ideas floating around.
What do you think, Mark Roderman? Benchmarks have been talked about by the president and Condoleezza Rice and everybody for a long time now, but it's the idea of putting teeth in them, consequences if they're not met, that seems to be, you know, the fault line here. Do you see the GOP coming to that line, coming to that view?
I do think that is the fault line, and I'd be very interested to see where that goes. I'm not sure that they'll have any teeth. I'd be interested in what Lynn thinks.
Lynn?
I mean, if benchmarks have teeth?
Yes. Are you going to get the GOP to – well, let's listen for a second, one voice from the field, and I'll get your thought on this, Lynn.
Okay.
But here's Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky saying he's interested and it might have some legs in the GOP.
There are a number of Republicans who do think that some kind of benchmarks, properly crafted, would actually be helpful. So I think that is an area that we can talk about beginning tomorrow.
But the president says he doesn't want anything that would tie anybody's hands in any way. So teeth in these the GOP
it's,
might...
It's a bargaining. What Bush is saying is a bargaining position. You know, start high and you negotiate away things. He can't... Bush won't get a bill that has no strings attached. What's at issue is how hard the knot is.
Yeah, and we know now, of course, just how hard these benchmarks are going to be to meet. Here's the New York Times headline, Draft Oil Bill Stirs Opposition, Benchmark in Danger. That's just, you know, the Kurds don't like the oil law that's up for debate. The Sunnis don't like it. It doesn't look like that's going to happen over the summer. That's one of the main benchmarks. Our caller earlier reminded us about provincial elections. That was supposed to be one of the main benchmarks. We've heard nothing on that. So, benchmarks, but whether they're meaningful or not remains to be seen.
And we heard straight from Baghdad earlier in this week just how tough it's been to get the government there united around these measures. Mark?
Well, you know, the other issue is they're taking 2 months off the Iraqi parliament, which I don't think will play well with the American people.
Yeah, when we're in the midst of surge and everything else. Very quickly, let me just touch on Murdoch and Dow Jones. Rupert Murdoch looking at buying up the Wall Street Journal. Lynn Sweet, there have been a lot of tremors in the newspaper business. You've no doubt felt them along with everybody else in recent months. How do you interpret this one?
Well, friends of mine who work for the Wall Street Journal sold their stock the other day, so I guess that means that they're worried. I think that the...
Of course, they also got a little bump out of that big money interest from Mr. Murdoch.
Sure. So he did a... You know, so even though some of the people I know associated with the company might not want it, I think that the business, it's not news. You don't need me to tell you that the business is undergoing massive change and that the ownership, you know, ownerships are owned and selling and buying. You know, in Chicago, the Chicago Tribune just was sold to a man named Sam Zell, and that company is being, you know, going through an overhaul. So the Wall Street Journal, Dow Jones, isn't immune to the market forces that are out there. And when Rupert Murdoch comes in with a big offer, it will do what it is. He stirs the pot. That's what he's so good at. And he found with the creation of this business channel that he wants to do, he found that Dow Jones, with all its many points of content that it creates, probably would be a reasonable acquisition for somebody starting a business channel.
And, of course, his political coloring comes right along with him. Jack, we've all watched and heard the Queen this week back on American shores, Elizabeth II down at Jamestown. 400 years. It was not her first trip there, her second, I guess, but that's a great big span of time. Makes you sit back and just look at what hath God and man wrought here over those centuries.
Yeah, it sure does. That's the long view that we get from her. I'm glad to see her over here. And anyone who enjoys the royals should really see the Queen, which is a marvelous picture about her trauma involving the princess.
The royals and a whole lot of history on display right there this week. I want to thank each of you for being with us. Lynn Sweet at the Chicago Sun-Times. Lynn, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Mark Roderman, there in Raleigh, North Carolina, at Roderman & Associates. Mark, thanks for being here. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And Jack Beattie, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.